6. Fragments. A lance, planted in the rubble like a flagpole. From its tip, the bloody rags of a man, flapping like a banner. Treads gone, the Carnadon tank of Geno 10 Cyrus lies upside down in a pool of putrid wastewater. All its hatches are submerged. The drive wheels grind intermittently, forward and seize, reverse and seize, a post-mortem twitch of dying systems. A feeble knocking comes from inside the sunken hull, but there is no one around to hear it. Arcatus Vindic Centurio, the Emperor's Eagle, holds Marshal's Court and the Kepler Gardens. Nothing survives of those places. Only a map overlay on his visor display identifies his location, a digital ghost of the parkland and noble square that existed just the day before. The custodian captain's golden war gear drips with blood and grease. Loyalists rush in to flank him, either side of the garden's one remaining tree. There is no battle order anymore. Those around him are Sola Auxilia, Exertus Imperialis, and Auxilia, militia reservists, legiones Astartes, a few Oblivion Knights and Null Maidens, a handful of old Hundred veterans, and a few civilians. It has come to this. What spills towards them isn't human, nor even Astartes transhuman. It is a keening wall of sarcophile horror, the vanguard of nightmare, exoplanar things that the galaxy once decreed could never be born, not here, not anywhere in the mortal plane. But the telethesic wards are snuffing out like spent candles, and these things have been born, and they are here, fright-winged and coarse-whiskered, coal-eyed and shrieking, skittering on bird legs and hoofed feet, bearing their fang spikes and mattock carnassials. Centurio has seen their ilk before, but never in real space, and never in such swarming numbers. He rests his hand, for one startled moment, against the scorched trunk of the one miraculous tree, a splintered rampike that is the only point of reference in the shredscape of mire and smoke. The man beside him, an auxiliar sergeant, whose name Centurio will never know, dies of fear. He simply dies, and drops. He does not scream or flee, but his mind and heart give out. Centurio blinks, humbled by a mere mortal. He raises his sentinel blade so that all around him can see it, and his voice so that all can hear. In the ditch below Regnum Way, the roasted shells of tracked war machines have collected like dead beetles in an exterminator's box trap. They are overturned, jumbled, piled up, so that the uppermost appear to be trying to crawl out over the bodies of the rest. But they are not. They are lifeless. The only thing rising from the ditch is a slow fume of smoke and dust. On the banks beyond the ditch, and all the way up Magistery Rise, their skulls have been mounted on stakes. The stakes are girders and pylon spars. The skulls are turrets, shadow swords, sycorans, rus patterns, slayer blades, fell blades, carnadons, glaives, storm hammers, some still snouted with weapon mounts, others with barrels snapped off. Such has been the fetishistic desecration of the World Eaters, raising trophies of decapitated tanks like a forest of elephant heads. Wet bones in a dry gulch. Dead hands fused to cremated weapons in mausoleums formed by neutralized bunkers. Kratos, spearhead centurion, Chrysaor, sergeant-at-arms, both are of the Iron Hands, both are of the shattered legions that were so cruelly mauled when this insanity first began. That seems to them like centuries ago. They have fought across the disintegrating territories of the Imperium to be here now, seeking only to serve as they were made to serve, and perhaps claim some repudiation and vengeance. On the majestic processional of the Eternals, which runs from the Temenos of the Inner Sanctum for 60 kilometres to where the Lion's Gate once towered, they line up among the Imperial fists to make good those claims. They yell the battle cry of their legion as the World Eaters approach. Their words are lost in the unison roar of the Imperial fists, declaiming their own martial cry around them. Their shout is out of step with the glory chant of the yellow-clad ranks, but they both hear it. Kratos and Chrysaor, in the sealed shells of their beaked helmets, hear the utterance of the Iron Tenth, diminished and outnumbered, but not gone. Not quite yet. And they know that, though the words of their cry and the Imperial fists are different, the meaning is the same. They will not retreat. Their flesh will not be weak, and their deeds will endure.